Peter R. Bregan, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour.
Well, hello, my wonderful, wonderful audience. We have a treat today. You're looking at a hero. His name is Mark Trozzi. He is from Canada, Ontario. He's an emergency room physician who, like many people, has transformed his life to take on COVID-19. I think, Mark, it sounds like your transformation has been even greater than most. You've given up pretty much your medical work connections, and you're working on COVID-19, from what I gather.
Yes, that's pretty much it. I've always been an emergency doctor, which I really love my work as emergency doctor. I've been doing it a long time, so an emergency still find me, I'm sure, as people needing help find you wherever you may be. Somebody needed it. Where I was, and I think in general, somebody, I felt my role that I could play, I just felt somebody needed to step right out.
You're frozen.
Take off what they call the golden panel.
Oh. Start over again on just what you were saying in the last minute.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so, yeah, that's essentially it. I've been doing emergency medicine for over 25 years, which I like very much, and teaching, and very interested in trauma, critical resuscitation, and teach that. But it became to me obvious that a role that someone needed to play, and I guess it was a role I saw to play, was that someone needed to just step away from the income entirely, step out of the system entirely, and just research and speak honestly. And so that's what I've done, kind of downsized and focused my effort on research and activism and public education. So that's been my life now for the past year anyways.
Again, you told me today you're meeting with Dr. McCullough and some other folks setting up an international medical committee.
Yeah, so we're at a kind of neat place because people have been waking up all around the world. And little pockets have formed. So, for instance, in Canada, you know, there's pre-existing physician groups like the Canada Health Alliance, and then there's groups that have formed, we formed in response to this as well, the Canadian COVID Care Alliance, and then there's activist groups like Take Action Canada and Canada Lockdown. So on one sphere, we've been coming together and recognizing, I started to recognizing being in both of these types of forums, that the doctors were needing someone to do what people were doing, and the people doing that were needing someone to do what the doctors could do. And so that has been part of a coming together of activist groups, coming together of physician groups, coming together of physicians and activist groups and journalist groups. And now really we're looking at all continents, and we're bringing together people who have been leaders on their continents, and we're forming really an international health council. And I'm honored to be, you know, invited by people more advanced than me and to be doing my role in that. So there's a lot of things happening. A lot of lawyers have stepped into the field. We're definitely waiting for, you know, I think judges and military and police and detectives to really step across the line and choose the right side of history as well. So things are happening and there's hope.
It is choosing the right side of history. We're at such a critical moment now. You're a wonderful speaker, folks. You should go to his website, Mark Trozzi, T-R-O-Z-Z-I, and he just gives really good talks that ordinary folks can clearly understand about complex matters, about the dangers of the vaccines. Just listen to a wonderful presentation you did to a very enthusiastic audience about that. Canada is among the most oppressive places. I noticed, I picked up in one of your presentations that the chief health officer in Canada is deeply associated with the World Health Organization. one of the things I've been looking at a lot now is what was the nexus for this, or the nubbin of this ability to just spread the word of conformity around the world. And certainly your chief medical officer being on this WHO advisory council, certainly one of the reasons why in Canada, you know, from communist China to the World Health Organization to Canada, and Dr. Tam would go the word very, very quickly. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, it makes total sense. I mean, the preparatory infiltration of governments and institutions around the world and taking control of really the economic system that can grease a lot of people to just keep going along with an agenda without questioning. These things have been really well prepared. And Canada is an extreme example for multiple reasons, including Dr. Tam's job for the World Health Organization running Canadians' lives.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen our manuscript. Our book is coming out in a few weeks now. It's COVID-19 and the Global Predators. And I always want to remind people, you can get the advanced copies of the book at wearethepray.com. Wearethepray.com to purchase ahead of time, a few weeks ahead of time. We're in print stage for the manuscript. But as always, the minute you sign up, you will get the manuscript for free as soon as you sign up. And international people in Canada can get the manuscript free. And we're arranging to be able to provide you the book within a few weeks as well. It's so clear that this thing has been globally organized. It's kind of mind-boggling. I haven't talked to you about it before, so if I don't know how much you information you have on Canada and how Canada got to be one of the most oppressed countries in the world. In Australia, there's a direct link to the communist Chinese, because Australia is doing a lot of business with China, and China wanted to have a southern route through Australia for its shipping, very important, and it gained a very strong economic foothold in the parts of Australia that have been most oppressed. We've had some, you know, good people from Canada on the Dr. Peter Bregenauer talking. I mean, from Australia, but also from Canada, we've had other people on as well. Do you have any special insight into how Australia became such a vicious lockdown?
Well, in terms of Canada, well, I have some insights, and some of them don't seem obvious at first, but I mean, we spoke about the conflict of interest of, I mean, the World Health Organization, which the Japanese president probably correctly called the China Health Organization, which really Dr. Tedros totally propped up communist with very nefarious history. I mean, you know, a political party that, you know, slaughters people in the street at Thanksgiving in Africa is really not the person you want running the World Health Organization. But
a Marxist, but anyway, communist party, no.
Yeah. So, you know, Tedros and Tam and a group of others, you know, run the steering committee, the whole thing, and then she has the job of, I mean, you can't do both, but looking out for Canadians. But in any way, she certainly has a lot of authority in our country at this time. And but then, you know, if you look at our history, our recent history, you know, there's a very famous person in Canada that people should know about, and that's named Jody Wilson-Raybould. And Jody Wilson-Raybould is a British Columbia, really, really quite a remarkable woman. There's a lot of fun history. Her father, was involved in some very interesting debates with Fidel Castro's good friend and, I guess, stepfather or father, who knows, of Justin Trudeau. So, but Jody Wilson-Raybould is the daughter of that important leader, Raybould. And she was appointed as the top legal authority in our country on the cabinet, or with the cabinet of Justin Trudeau, back when he formed government. But that's an office that requires some independence. I mean, in other words, the top legal authority has to follow the law, not manipulate the law according to the government. And Jody Wilson-Raybould was honorable doing that job as it's supposed to be done. And she went public after quite a significant struggle with the criminality of this government. You know, its involvement in SNC-Lavalin, a company that was involved in such nefarious things as prostituting girls to Libyan leader Gaddafi's son, and other bribery things that were done to get big construction contracts. I mean, this is very serious criminal stuff. And SNC-Lavalin was appointed to, or was set up to be investigated, and Jody Wilson-Raybould could have stopped it, but there was no reason to stop it, and there was no legal premise for it to stop it. But she was pressured by the Trudeau government extensively to stop it until eventually she actually, and it's a very big testimony. It was huge news. I'll tell you why I'm so surprised what happened after it. But she revealed just this incredible pressure for her to get SNC-Lavalin. It was blatant criminality of the government, and she exposed it in a public hearing. And I went to bed going, okay, wow, like I really quite suspected a lot was wrong here, but it looks like, you know, the prime minister of the country is probably going to be arrested next. And you know, this is the gig's up, right? But instead, she got fired. Someone else was appointed. So we're 4 or 5 years into some really crazy stuff in Canada in terms of who's running this country. You know, I was very sad. I mean, when I heard Justin Trudeau's acceptance speech, I was like, wow, this sounds great. In fact, I wrote him a little thank you letter, really, and said, wow, you know, what a great vision for the country. But 2 days later, you know, the headline was that Justin Trudeau was meeting with George Soros. And that's when I realized, really, anyone who's, you know, deeply into the study of geopolitics. So there's a lot of Canadian government.
That is so important, the degree to which Soros is involved in this whole thing. At first, I thought Soros was kind of a outsider manipulating countries all on his own, and I couldn't pin him down into COVID-19. And then very recently, he's gone into business with Bill Gates. So you've got, you know, Bill Gates, who was supposed to be the angel of America, this sweet young boy doing all this good work, and then this evil, Soros. But as it turns out, they work together closely. And now you're telling me, which I didn't know, that he was working with Trudeau as well. It's very, it's all part of this, what I call in the book, Ginger and I call the global predators.
Very well phrased. Yeah, and we are the prey.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And we are the prey.
It's interesting how the tentacles go, because just, you know, you find it in big things, you find it in small things. And you know, for instance, I have a son who's a university student at University of Ottawa and working very hard and building himself an important career. But anyways, very close to the beginning of this carrot that they're telling the students they'll be able to live like human beings again. They suddenly said, oh, actually, we've encouraged you to get in these injections. I don't call them vaccines unless I go like that. But take these injections, experimental, dangerous genetic injections with God knows what else in them. But now we're demanding it. Like, in order for you to walk on this campus and be involved in your life and continue your education, et cetera, you will take the injection. I thought, my God, really, this is where we're at. I mean, and there's a lot going on the other side of this, but this is what we're having to counter in Canada. So I just thought, who is this person that wrote this letter? Who is this, you know, president of the university? So I looked him up. And you know what his job was before he was president of the university? He was in New York working at an open society organization, George Soros.
Oh,
right?
Lord.
They've infiltrated positions of authority all over the place. Government, university. I mean, yeah, really. A lot of prep work.
Which university was? I'm taking notes, folks. Don't do that a lot. What university and who is this person? I'll check him out some more.
University of Ottawa. And forgive me, so much happens.
Well, he'll be easy to find.
I can't bring his name to mind. Oh, and there's another interesting thing. You won't believe this. This is just trivia. Oh, you'll see it when you find him. When you find him, it's interesting. He's another person who was born Jewish who changed his name to a non-Jewish name. Who else do we know that did that? George Soros. Bizarre little bit of trivia. Doesn't particularly matter, but.
Well, it matters to me. I'm Jewish, and it matters to me how many Jews just get so misled by progressivism and get caught up in these pretty awful things. But then again, we do inspiring things as well.
Oh, for
sure.
We're
just good and evil like everybody else.
Amen. Well, we're in this together. I mean, our there's the golden rule, it brings us all together. And I think anyone who doesn't live the golden rule, then they're not a real Christian or a real Jew or a real Muslim or a real humanitarian or whatever. But the rest of us, I think we're real, most of us.
Do you want to talk at all personally about what you've been through? You're such an interesting person, like so many people, folks in the field. Clearly, Mark is very, very oriented to God, very oriented. And I'm seeing this with just about everybody I deal with, and I am too. I really believe that we need to listen to what we think the Almighty, the Creator, however you want to think of him, the principle of goodness in the universe. How should we be operating at this time? And certainly the founders of America thought a great deal that way. And I try to think that way. I look at us as refounders, but it's more than refounders of America. It's refounders of the principle of liberty in the world, which is just in such horrible shape now. But do you want to tell us a little about your own personal background? One thing about this show is, and Mark and I didn't have a chance to talk before the show today, folks. This is almost the first time that I'm getting to know the person just purely on the interview, and of course what I've read about him and stuff I've watched. But what you've been through with this, because it's important that people understand the meaning of taking on these issues and how important they are.
Well, sure. I'll try to kind of skim through my experience. So like everyone else, I was going about my life, and then the TV said that there was a huge outbreak in China and people were dying en masse, and you know, Ferguson, who one of the most incredible mathematicians in history, if you look at what he did in the last decade or two, but somehow they appoint him, no surprise, to make these models that, you know, massive portion of the population is going to die, and that people are walking around spreading a disease and you can't tell it, and everybody stay away from each other, lock yourself in your house, it's just 2 weeks, we're going to flatten the curve and life will be great because we don't want to overfill the hospitals. So I was with everybody else when this started, right? And only the difference was I worked in hospitals, right? So I went into work, and you know, suddenly we were wearing put masks at the door, and I was just going with it. In fact, I was thinking, oh well, if we're going against a virus, shouldn't we have different kinds of masks? These don't actually work. These are just procedural masks. Like, anyways,
procedural masks. Oh my.
Yeah, like there's a mask you wear not to cough on a wound, right? But in any event, as things went, I mean, of course, I started researching right away. Very quickly, I find out about what Zelenko's experiences were with ivermectin and zinc and hydroxychloroquine. And very quick, I'm studying between shifts, and I'm looking at the replicase enzyme and how zinc inhibits and how hydroxychloroquine gets more zinc into the cell. I mean, I'm looking at this stuff going, okay, come on, this makes a lot of sense, right? I hadn't even figured out about what we knew about ivermectin from laboratory stuff, but just where we were with hydroxychloroquine. Right. So I was like, well, wait, there's when these people come that are coming who are going to be super sick with this respiratory disease, there is a treatment that works. And I was amazed how that was just blown off in Canada. I was like, nope, doesn't work. Somebody tweeted that it doesn't work. Oh, by the way, fairly quickly after that, the government saying you're not to use it, public health saying, oh no, don't prescribe it. It's like, wait a minute, totally safe drug that could help a lot. And I can't prescribe it to somebody who's dying of a mysterious disease, which we will not have double blind studies on for a long time until we find out, oh, it's a cold, right? A little bit genetically manipulated and criminal, but still a cold. But anyways, this is a process of discovery that I'm going through. And as I'm questioning things, I'm starting to realize that, wow, we don't really have a conversation about this anymore. I mean, I guess we can't see each other's faces. That's not helping us socially, but we can't see each other. People are like saying things. Good people are saying things like, "It's not our job to question public health, Mark. You know, keep your head down, put that mask on, and keep going." And then there was the disconnect between my daily reality, which was after 25 years of working very hard in emergency, I was suddenly sitting in emergency with almost nothing to do. I worked two 14-hour night shifts with zero patients. Do you know how busy I've been for 25 years? So
everybody is staying home because they're so afraid of the virus. They're not coming to the ER, and people aren't just getting sick like they were supposed to. Is that it?
And Yeah. And we're learning all these things about, like, I mean, the fundament in my job of resuscitation is A, right? Like airway, like ABC. When we have to resuscitate, if somebody's really sick, you say, hey, ABC, right? First thing you need an airway, next you need breathing. And we're learning all, so a lot of times in my job, when somebody comes in really sick, I mean, like dying, you know, like if I don't do something, it's a crisis. It's called critical resuscitation. First thing is I got to make sure they have an airway and they're breathing. And suddenly we've got all these new parameters because of this super scary airborne Ebola that we're being advertised. And I'm looking at these protocols and going, I am so glad there's nobody here because they'll die. Because if it takes me a minute and a half to intubate somebody who's like in a bad heart rhythm, they ain't going to make it. I got to do that in 35 seconds, right? Anyways, so there was that disconnect. And then I go to the store, I go out in public. And everybody's lined up like, you know, 6 feet apart in the snow to buy some groceries with masks on. And they see me and I guess they can recognize you through the mask. They're like, oh, doctor, you go to the front of the line. I'm like, why? They're like, oh, what you're going through. I'm going, what I'm going through? And they're like, oh, we know it. The hospital's full of people dying of COVID all over the continent. So now I'm talking to doctors all over the continent and I'm getting the same story. Like, nah, they're lying. So, like, I'm not, I don't consider myself Mr. Super Ethical. I don't run a church or anything like that. But the truth does matter, right? So, and I find it very hard to, like, I mean, I've lied. Everybody's lied. That's where, you know, I mean, in my little version of things, you know, we're all sinners, right? So, but I'm just not into lying to people. And, you know, there was money to be made for sure with this scam. I mean, they needed the doctors, nurses, teachers, right? They made it easy. You know, hey, you guys can stay home, do some Zoom stuff, get extra pay. That people are going to think you're superheroes, but really it's pretty slack time. And when these injections come out, there'll be lots of money to be made. Just put on your muzzle and go along. Put on your mask. It's not a mask. So I guess breathing barrier, muzzle, facial barrier, social obstructor. These are the appropriate terms. Sorry, I get a little angry when I talk about this, Peter. I mean, clearly you're a psychiatrist and I'm a patient at this moment. But just as a joke.
Yeah. You're my hero. I'm your interviewer.
Oh, thanks, Peter. But anyways, so eventually I could see that I had two choices. You know, one was to further submit to this, you know, evil thing. And the other was to have some faith and say, you know what? I'm going to live without everything that makes me a slave to this. And I'm going to not try to burn my bridges. I'm going to just resign from every job I have that requires me to be part of this, requires me to walk in and have a security guard tell me to put on a muzzle when I should be the expert in that building on when and how to use masks for medical procedures. Right. And so that's my story. I've studied this thing ridiculously. Like, usually I study critical resuscitation. I've spent more time. I was talking to Patrick Phillips about this. There's a great Canadian here, Dr. Patrick Phillips, guy who tries to report the adverse reactions and gets punished for trying to report it in big cover-up land of Canada. But is that we have never studied so much about one viral thing. So I've studied COVID a lot. I know a fair bit about it. I'm just trying to tell people the truth. And I'm trying to work with the other people. We need lawyers. We need judges. We need everybody, military. I mean, this is a major problem. And trying to work with everybody, activists. And we got to get this right, because if we sink the Titanic, you know, even the luxury suites are at the bottom of the ocean. So anyone who's feeling like, oh, I've got to good position, I don't want to threaten my tenure at the university, or I don't want to make a decision at the courthouse that might threaten my promotion in the judicial system. Like, if we don't turn this around, like, there is no reasonable future for anybody. So everybody's got to just do somewhat what I've done, which is put truth ahead of money, I guess. We got to be creative. We got to help each other out. I mean, it's a bit tough times. Oh, by the way, the website is drtrozzi.com, drtrozzi.com. Just, you know, he mentioned Mark, but it's just drtrozzi.
Drtrozzi. And really, you'll see some very fine videos, the kind you can play for friends, the kind you can sit around, watch as a group, and cheer along and get educated in a very straightforward way. How are you holding up personally?
I think, predominantly good. I've always avoided administrative work. Like, I like to work physically. Like, so I like to be an emergency doctor. If somebody comes in and their leg's broken or they need their heart, I like to move around and do stuff and work with physical things. I know how to do email and stuff, but I'm not somebody who loves to work with computer, and I'm not someone who loves administrative work by nature. I've avoided that. On my days off, I'm more likely to do carpentry than I am to do more computer work or you know, communication work. So that in a way, because what this requires is an awful lot of communication, an awful lot of research, an awful lot of activism and emailing and writing and, you know, so, but I keep it in a balance. You know, I like to swim and when I can and just do little stretches and stuff and try to get some time in nature. So, you know, I've reduced my budget quite a bit. So that creates some stress, you know, because... You know, children, and I got a son in university, and we don't know what's going to happen. You know, does he have to move to Alberta to be a free human being and go to university in Canada? We don't know. Because, you know...
Are the doctors being coerced in this country? You know, doctors are being coerced that if they're on the staffs of hospitals, they have to get the injection or on the university, or not just kids going to the university, but everybody. You're having the same thing in Canada, or maybe even more than we are.
Yeah, to be hopefully comic and graphic, the Nuremberg Code is being urinated on by psychopaths all over this country.
Yeah,
it's bizarre. I'm trying to understand the psychology of it. In fact, there's a psychologist in Canada, Karen Epstein Gilboa, and she's been researching this. And whenever I get a chance to talk to her and get some insight into this, you know, basically mass psychosis, the extreme propaganda and techno propaganda that has actually got people going along with this. It's just profound.
The way, folks, the Nuremberg Code applies is something I've written about, and I have a paper on the role of psychiatry in Nazi Germany. And so I've looked a lot at this kind of issue. But the way the Nuremberg Code applies, it was originally intended to say that if you're somebody who's an inmate of a coercive, totally and overwhelming institution, like an extermination camp or a concentration camp, you can't be said to be volunteering for experiments. And the way this has been extended, and I've tried to participate in extending it, is we're now in a situation where everybody in the country is coerced. In Canada, U.S., and most of the nations of the world, we're all being coerced into taking a vaccine, which is not a vaccine, an experimental poison, let's say, getting our body to poison ourselves by making the most dreadful part of the SARS-CoV-2 in our own bodies, literally making the protein spike in our own bodies because we've been injected with the DNA or RNA that is forcing our bodies to do that. And it's that gruesome, and it is causing a lot of damage. And this is an experiment being forced on people. In the U.S. now, we're getting younger and younger and forcing it on children. Oh, and by the way, the great news today is that Pfizer has been approved formally, not just under the emergency use authorization, but formally approved in the U.S. for infliction on human beings here. It was a foregone conclusion. By the way, Pfizer was the originally selected corporation by Bill Gates and his huge consortium, which people don't know about, called CEPI, C-E-P-I. They chose Pfizer back around 2016 or earlier. Pfizer was doing work on this as far back as 2002 on viral replicating in the lab parts of viruses, including replicating in labs the spike protein of a dog virus. So, I mean, they go way back on doing this work. And Pfizer was the chosen company by Bill Gates and his multi-billion dollar organization called CEPI. And then Moderna was chosen as well. And it's no surprise that Pfizer is the first drug that was given an EUA, and Moderna was the second, and now Pfizer is the first drug approved. It's literally the selection of Bill Gates working with the World Health Organization. And Bill Gates heavily invested in personally in Pfizer and Moderna, and also his foundations invested in these in these companies. And CEPI is also invested in these pharmaceutical industries. And just to tie the bow a little bit with stuff we've been tying together lately, the World Health Organization is supported by three separate organizations involved with Bill Gates. Not just his foundation, but GABA and then another national foundation here in the U.S. So the tie-ins are just dreadful. And more and more, World Health Organization, which means the U.N., folks, the U.N., and God save us, literally, from the UN, is deeply involved in all of this. And we're still untangling more and more and more of these connections, which are really quite mind-boggling. And you and I, we should have at some point a separate discussion on the air about connections at some point down the line.
I like that. I'm sure I'd find that enlightening.
Yes. So we can go anywhere in the discussion here. I think it would be very interesting for you to just talk about the viruses and, I mean, sure, the vaccines and what you know about the vaccines and the damage they're doing. We can't talk about that enough.
Sure. No, I'd love to. So so the experimental injections in which and I, as you said, you explained them very well. So they're not vaccines, right? We've had a lot of vaccines, and there's people that debate pro-vaccine, anti-vaccine. This is not that debate, right? Like, this is so different, it's hard to believe, you know. So using a wrong name, like, for instance, this is not a pandemic. When you look at mathematics, they had to change the definition of pandemic, get rid of the math so there was no numbers required preemptively, so that they could just declare a pandemic whenever they want without the math, and then they could lie to people about the math. But so by calling these injections vaccines, it's like if I point at my cat and I say, that's a beautiful horse, and are you going to call it a horse too? So I think people need to know it's not a vaccine. So the debate you're used to like, oh, well, does the MMR vaccine cause autism? Well, maybe it does a little bit. We don't know. I mean, maybe it's a bad idea, but some think it's a good idea. That's a debate worth having. But there's no debate in this. Like, I mean, what we see so far, before we go into the science of them a bit, is in 13 years in the reporting to the VAERS system, which is only a portion of what happens, like, you know, about 10% of adverse reactions are reported because it's voluntary.
Or less, you know, some of the estimates go down to 1 in 100 or less, scientific estimates.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
And now every doctor's afraid to report anything.
Yeah, also true.
So when you go ahead.
But if you go through 13 years of all the vaccines combined, I mean, MMR, tetanus, polio, I mean, all of them, you know, like, there's so many vaccines. People are taking more vaccines than they probably need to, I would say, for sure. Talking about real vaccines, not this injection, these injections. But in 13 years, there was 3,005 deaths reported. We doubled that in half a year with one injection of a thing that's being mislabeled as a vaccine. So think about that. If in 6 months, this thing can kill at least twice as much as all vaccines killed in total for 13 years, there's one sign that it's not a vaccine. But then if you look at what's in it, and there's some things we don't know, but if you go to the, like, I studied the briefings that they made to the FDA, and there they have composition, and I think they leave some things out, and they got some legal excuse to do that. But what's in there, you know? So instead of a vaccine is a little bit of the thing you're trying to protect against. You break it up, you put some fragments, or you weaken a virus and you inject it. So it's not able to cause an infection, but there it is. Your body can respond to it, make some antibodies, develop some immunity to work in the future if you need it, if you ever get the real thing. That's a vaccine. But in this case, you're injected with some nanoparticles, and that's a scary science, or you're injected with a different kind of virus which has been sort of modified to carry genetic material. And in either case, you get delivered into your cells either the messenger RNA, a genetic material of coronavirus, but modified, patented, something special for you, or you get some modified DNA delivered by a virus which actually goes into your nucleus. And in either case, this stuff now hijacks your cellular machinery, not to make parts of you, but to make parts of it. And as you said, the spike protein and a modified spike protein, this one's got some special features that you wouldn't want. So now your body, as you said, Dr. Bregan, is producing pieces, the adherence piece, the piece of the coronavirus that sticks to cells and starts the infection. And so your body's producing this, and they lie and they say, well, because we call it a vaccine, it will only go in the muscle where we inject it and the local lymph nodes, because that's what vaccines do. But that's also like me saying, because I call my cat a horse, you can put a saddle on it and ride it to town. You can't, just because I call it a horse. And to boot, Moderna and Pfizer, they used what are called pegylated nanoparticles as the Trojan horse to deliver this genetic material. Well, what are pegylated nanoparticles? Well, you pegylate a nanoparticle to make it go everywhere. That's how they used it for like chemotherapy experiments in the brain with cancer. Right? So for them to say, don't worry, it'll stay in the muscle because we call it a vaccine, and that's what vaccines do. And yet they make it of something known to cross the placenta, to cross the blood-brain barrier. And when you think about it, it goes in the mother's brain and it goes in her baby's brain and everything else. So anyways, you got this stuff through the body and it goes in the cells and it gets the cells producing a spike protein, which is a poison. It's a toxin, as you pointed out. It has various ways to be toxic. And this is now going through the body and it's going to all the tissues that have what are called ACE2 receptors, which are receptors for the spike protein. And that includes all small blood vessels. That's why people, one of the main reasons people are getting blood clots causing heart attack or blood clot causing stroke or blood clot causing headache or blood clot causing vomiting or blood clot causing rash, blood clot causing swollen legs, or even blood clots through the entire venous system of the brain, just turning the entire drainage of the brain into basically a gelled space. Very rare, but not as rare as it used to be since we started these injections. So as well, because those spike proteins are floating around, those modified spike proteins, your body makes some antibodies, and that's their excuse to say, well, you see, it's a vaccine. We just gave you some spike protein, and you made some antibodies to it, right? So it's just such a different thing. Why are we taking this? Like, why would we run a crazy experiment? If what they lied to us and said may be true, if it was like, we have an airborne Ebola, 90% of the population would be dead, we must try something. I get it. I'd take the needle, maybe. Especially if it was coming from someone I could trust. But the truth is, this isn't a pandemic. Never was a pandemic. It doesn't satisfy the math. And yes, they change definitions of words and call my cat a horse or call this injection a vaccine, but I don't accept that. I own my mind. We own our mind. And a pandemic had a definition that required math for a long time. And in preparation for this, about 10 years ago, they think they could just change that and get rid of it. It has to be magnitudes of order, more mortality and disease than an annual flu, influenza, than a bad annual influenza. And so if you look at influenzas, you had to pick one of the kind of badder ones and say magnitudes worse, more people dying by multiples, right? That just isn't happened. We've had worse influenzas, you know. I just put out a newsletter today. It was such a beautiful thing someone sent me. It's just a graph, a dynamic graph. And you look at deaths from different things. And as I have a video called Canada, how is this a pandemic? But it applies to the whole world, and other people have done it. And it's just, there aren't more people dying in 2020. Like 2020 was not a year where a lot of people died more than usual, but a lot of people that did die were mislabeled as COVID to support this program. So you look, all of a sudden, people stop dying of influenza, people stop dying of lung disease, people stop dying, oh, they all died of COVID. Well, how? Well, I don't know. Maybe either we suspected it and we got paid for suspecting it, or we swabbed their nose and proved it. But now we know, and we knew back then, and this is one of the first things that really gave me a red alert is when I studied this PCR test. We now know that 97% of those tests were false positive. What does that mean? It means for 100 people that got told, you got COVID, go lock yourself in the basement, 97 of them did not. And we also know that it was a complete and absolute lie about asymptomatic spread. When people are spreading a cold, coronavirus or rhinovirus, they have symptoms. And everything your grandma taught us and all our culture and when to wash your hands before meals and also to shake hands and have contact and build immunity, all the stuff of wisdoms of centuries turns out to be pretty darn smart. And And so as much as I get it, the Gestapo seems to be heading to the door with a rifle to say, take this injection. I don't have all the answers, but by no means should people take this injection. And the idea of it injecting into kids is just, you know, and if I could comment one more thing, Peter, that you've been talking, and I think it's a very important point, Bill Gates. Why is it that doctors who do their homework, have a medical degree, have a license to practice medicine, and say or tweet that I don't think people should take this injection, or this isn't a vaccine, why are they in trouble, according to the infiltrated institutions? They say, well, you can't say that. You know, that's not within your medical license. Okay. Well, why is it that Bill Gates, who has no medical degree, who clearly has a psychological history of eugenicist philosophy, right, who clearly has been involved in sterilizing girls through injection campaigns through his companies and all kinds of horrific stuff, nice buddy Epstein, why is he allowed to go everywhere in the world and practice medicine, right? Like, Hitler was rich too. He came down.
It's a question of our times. One of the things I think that helps understand this is that getting rich, wealthy, and powerful through the vaccine, which we show in our book, was planned years ahead of time, even into the details, as I mentioned earlier, as to who was going to be the first vaccine manufacturers to get through. Gates was talking about RNA and DNA vaccines in 2017, probably knew, was working on it more privately, not speaking about it, well before 2017. The plan is much more than just about wealth and simple power. The spike protein is about the spearhead of totalitarianism. We have a 2017 document, which we're calling the Master Plan. One of our chapters is Bill Gates and the Master Plan. And in which his CEPI is giving a presentation to the World Health Organization. I found it buried in the WHO. The documents, so it certainly got to WHO, and talking about a deal they have, which they even call a working agreement, a nearly legal working agreement. And it's about dividing up the world into two segments. One, the making money, the distribution of the vaccine, the licensing of the vaccine, and then the control of the science, which will be through WHO, which means through China, that the scientific arbitration, the declarations of what's right and wrong in the science will be through literally the World Health Organization. So here are two groups that have no essential power to tell us anything, the World Health Organization and Bill Gates' CEPI, which is an industrial complex, basically working with governments around the world. And they're telling ahead of time exactly how we're going to deal with this coming virus, which they've already labeled as a SARS coronavirus as far back as 2017, not 2019, as everybody thinks. They were labeling it that at least as far back as 2017. And it's clearly about managing the world. It's about the whole concept of a new world order, a whole concept of industry and government controlling the world, raping the world, managing the world in its own way. And really, the spike protein is the spearhead of totalitarianism, even more than it is the spearhead of this particular pandemic. And it's amazing to look back and see how there's not a single accident in this whole process. People say, oh, it was just a catastrophic accident. Doctors made one mistake after another, blah, blah, blah. No, no, no. This has turned out exactly as Bill Gates planned it with their memorandum of understanding, is what that legal document, nearly legal document was called, that they made with their memorandum of understanding. And it went so far in this memorandum as to say that drug companies would have no expenses. Everything would be paid. Doesn't say by the government, just as everything will be paid for the drug companies. There'd be no loss, so they can freely produce these vaccines to save the world. But they'll be making profits, and if the profits get too large, according to Gates, then the top of the profits have to be given back to CEPI, which is Bill Gates's foundation. It's like, we have it in the book. It's the only place we did photostatic copies in the book. We actually have copies of this essentially memorandum of understanding. It's overwhelming to think about. You're so heroic in what you're doing now. I want to just say this is amazing meeting you, Mark, and I want to be just, you know, working with you and doing what I can to help you out and having you back here talking more. We can also do short videos in addition to this one. And by the way, we were stopped from putting up anything further on our YouTube. We got our second strike. The third would have been permanent. And so we've started to build in other places now. And to my amazement, it's so important, folks, for you guys to have hope and to know this. To my amazement, our radio, TV production like this is doing as well on an alternative platform called Brighteon.
Adams' place.
Yes.
Super.
Adams, who we've known on and off for years. I was an early blogger on his website. I don't even know if he has bloggers anymore. We're not doing that. But Mike Adams, Brighteon, and it's Brighteon, one word, Brighteon. And we're getting thousands within days for watching these shows. And I think that it's just going to continue to build up. We got to build alternative institutions. We cannot rely.
Yeah.
I mean, you are such an example of pulling out of the establishment institutions. I was already largely outside of them, not necessarily by choice, but simply by telling the truth. I've been outside of the major institutions for decades with my books on the drug companies and stuff. But we're doing well outside the establishment. The book, Mark, is already in advance sold over 10,000 copies, and that's with nothing more than ordering them in advance on wearethepray.com. And we've got a lot of inquiries from Canada. They can't order in advance, and inquiries from Europe, and we're figuring out how now to get back in touch with those inquiries and say, hey, the book is available now. So we've had thousands of inquiries from around the world, especially Canada. So go ahead.
I was going to say, I just got your book and I've had a chance to dabble in it and liked very much what I got a chance to get into. And then after getting a chance to meet you and talk with you, which is kind of cool, like we didn't really prep this, we're getting to meet each other, and I'm very honored. I can tell that you have a lot of insights and that it's going to take my knowledge in areas of this field deeper. So I'm excited. I am going to find some time to hide from everybody and enjoy your new book.
Folks. I just want to make that clear. What we did, we sent Mark a manuscript, but you in Canada can get the manuscript for free by going to wearethepray.com, and you don't have to pay us a dime to buy anything, because we can't deliver a book yet to Canada, but we're going to just give you the manuscript anyway from Canada. So just go ahead and do it. The manuscript is going out around the world. That also means to the creditors, shoot me, and you're going to make that manuscript the most widely read thing in the world, because it is so out there, and everybody will know if something happens to me and Ginge, why, and they're going to just start looking at COVID-19 and the global predators. We have about 8 minutes left. I've so much enjoyed listening to you. Anything in particular, again, folks, we didn't get to plan this session. Anything in particular to talk about?
Well, you know, sometimes I think about, I'll go over similar periods or whatever, but looking at different aspects of it. And there's kind of an analysis situation I think we're coming to, especially as we look at early treatment. So if we look at the kind of the big picture that's happened, so we were told there was going to be a huge death rate. There is not. Okay, so people have no more biological reason to be freaked out over COVID SARS-2 than last year's influenza. You know, there was a real pandemic in 1968 and we had Woodstock and everything was fine. So the state program germophobia, you can kind of let go of it, right? But it is true, like influenza, SARS-CoV-2, and there have been other coronaviruses in the world that do kill people. And generally, it's people that are very vulnerable for other reasons. In other words, if I, you know, I smoke a pack a day, and 60 years into it, when I'm, you know, 80 and I got a bit of a breathing trouble and there's a cold going around, I might die because I'm going to be much more vulnerable to that cold. I mean, it's not great. I hope you guys miss me, but it's not a reason for everyone to lock themselves up and live as germophobes with things on their face that actually make them sicker instead of help. But even if we look at that portion, let's say we look at that portion, that 0.3% of the population who are all either pre-existing and have certain diseases or are very sick, are very advanced age, and rarely not one of those. But we have early treatment, so we could save 85-90% of those people. Like people don't realize these treatments work. You don't need them because you probably won't need them. Like if I get COVID-19 or COVID-20 or whatever comes along, I'm probably not going to need to take ivermectin and the other medications. But we have it well worked out. We know how to safe medicine, cheap medicine. It's been used for years. I mean, ivermectin is rated one of the safest medicines in history. It actually won a Nobel Prize as an anti-parasite medicine. It turns out to work great against SARS-CoV-2. So you've interviewed Dr. McCullough. There's a world expert on this, Dr. Corey. We got Canada COVID Care Alliance. I mean, on my website, you can find it. It's not hard science. So here's the thing. If you have a disease which isn't particularly fatal disease, really, and you don't really have a pandemic, and there's a medicine that you could treat it with if you got really sick, which would be unlikely, why are we being forced to lock ourselves up and take a dangerous experimental injection, which is already proving killing so many people that normally an injection would have been halted immediately, like after 25 deaths, not after 500,000 deaths, right? So there's no reason for it. But people say, well, we'll go along with it because, you know, they have the power. Well, problem is, what are we going along with? Again, don't have all the answers, folks, but I would not be rolling up my sleeve and I would join the movement because we got a problem, you know, and the problem is villainous people in this world doing horrific things. And they've infiltrated a lot of stuff. It's a tricky situation, but really in terms of the biology, that particular virus, I mean, the people that make these viruses and release these viruses again, they're the problem. The cure for COVID is justice. Cure for COVID is actual rule of law on this planet. Thanks. I heard a funny one from a commentator. She said the injection that cures COVID is delivered by a lawful firing squad.
Oh, God. Yes.
That was a joke I heard from a commentator, but perhaps. Happened to.
Well, just to end on a positive. Well, this is a positive note. I mean, everything you're saying is positive about the fact is that the danger is not from the virus. The danger is political. The danger is Trudeau working with WHO and working with Soros and that in Canada. And the danger in the U.S. is a corrupt, demented president who's financially up to his neck and his whole family with the Chinese communists, with corrupt money from years and years to his son. And so, I mean, the issues are large and political and suppressive. But one of the things we found, Mark, and I hope you've had the same, Dr. Trozzi, the same experience, that we're meeting such wonderful people as a result of making a huge decision to risk not as much as you. I think you're really heroic, but to get involved in something like we'd never been involved with before. And one of the things we found is that the great numbers of wonderful people who are working together on these principles. And very often, folks, they're tied deeply into the Judeo-Christian traditions, religions, and they have a deep belief in God. And I'm not saying you can't join this if you're an atheist or a humanist. I mean, because there's such big liberty issues that they can be understood from many ways. But a lot of the heroism is coming from a deep belief in doing God's work. And, you know, it's certainly why Ginger and I are here. We asked ourselves that that criteria. You know, what would God do about you sitting by on this one, Petey and Gingy? he wouldn't smile about it the way he was smiling now. But we have just been inspired by meeting wonderful people. I mean, I could have been working on psychiatric reform for 5 straight years and not met a single person that I admire as much as you working with me. And in our case, now there are people who are clearly at least as devoted as Ginger and I to the truth, and perhaps even more devoted to living thoroughly by it. I just want to thank you for doing that. And
it's totally mutual. And you know, I completely relate to what you're saying, the experience you and Ginger are having, which is, in fact, recently I got to join a nice meeting and someone asked me, what's the best and worst thing that's happened for you in the last year and a half? And I said, well, and I know they think the worst thing is, you know, not having the income that I normally have and having to deal with all that type of thing. But no, I said, well, the worst thing is what everyone else is going through, like having to put a covering on my face and submit to this madness and being disconnected and not being able to go to a concert or a church or, you know, like people not shaking hands, all this madness, seeing all this. So the bad thing for me is the same as everybody else, being put through this complete and absolute abuse of our human rights. But the best thing, I said exactly what you said, is that in this process, I am meeting, like I've always gotten along with the doctors I work with, but I'm meeting the most wonderful doctors and lawyers and activists and like, because, you know, I guess it's the first people to get off the bench and try to help and recognize what's going on. There's special characteristics of insight and diligence and some obedience to a higher thought, at least. So I'm with you. And meeting you, this is wonderful. I know we're going to see more of each other. I'm going to bug you because I think we need you in forming international councils that are going on. And I'm grateful to know you. I'm grateful for your book. I'm going to be crunching into that. People are going to have to leave me alone. I'm going to hide in the bathroom if I have to read the manuscript.
Wonderful. Mark Trozzi, tell people one last time how they get in touch with you.
Yeah, so I have a website, drtrozzi.com, drtrozzi.com. And also, I'm pretty active. We have an activist group in Canada, takeactioncanada.ca. That's a really great place to be involved and a great place to keep up. I have a newsletter sign up at drtrozzi.com. I get very good feedback on it. A lot of people are enjoying it. Often they're very short newsletters, usually average one a day, but they'll keep you on the ball on this stuff. And probably you'll see me pretty soon after I get to review this book. There'll be a newsletter about this book, I can tell, because this is there's some insights I need in there.
Thank you again very, very much. And as always, my wonderful audience, thank you for taking seriously such difficult matters. Thank you for, you know, listening and following what we do here. And I'll say it, God bless all of you, and we need to be together in this fight. Thank you.